This is Self-Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self-Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. If you're the one who identifies as borderline, there are treatments, and DBT, dialectical behavior therapy, is the best treatment that we know of at this point. It's very goal-directed and teaches you how to hook up your mind with your tendencies to be too emotionally governed. Both your thoughts and your emotions are important, but your impulsivity and tendency to way over-personalize has to be corrected. And it can be. Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. Today, we're focusing on what are termed borderline traits, as well as different types of borderline personality disorder. The National Institute of Health, or NIH, states, this disorder is associated with considerable functional impairment, intensive treatment utilization, and high societal costs. The risk of self-mutilation and suicide is high. In the general adult population, the lifetime prevalence of borderline personality disorder has been reported to be from 0.7 to 2.7%, while its prevalence is about 12% in outpatient services and 22% in inpatient psychiatric services. There are many people, primarily women, who struggle with it without knowing what to call it. In fact, it wasn't even a diagnosis until 1980, but that certainly doesn't mean it wasn't real before that date. There's a commercial on TV these days for a store. I think it's a foot store. In it, the spokesperson, who's a smiling, slightly overweight older guy, says, "I was born with a sunny disposition." Then he goes on to say that he lost that disposition when his body started hurting. I think he said something about his knee. But poof, as soon as he put the foot thing with the arch in it in his shoe, he was back to his old self, sunny and happy. Wouldn't it be nice if all dispositions would be that easy to fix? If there was some orthotic device that would miraculously reposition you into a calmer, happier place. Having any kind of personality disorder is tough. What do those words personality disorder even mean? We'll go over that. You may be wondering if you or someone you love struggles with that. And today I'll be focusing on four different categories within the borderline framework that Dr. Christine Lawson uses in her fantastic book, Understanding the Borderline Mother. Her whole approach is so that you, as her adult child, can recognize and learn how to have a relationship with your mom, who may be borderline, in as successful a way as possible, that you see and even have some empathy for her problems, but you also aren't governed by them. The listener feedback for today is an email I received from a woman who'd read Perfectly Hidden Depression. She read it in Iran. It's such an honor to read about her experience and makes me smile for her. But first, let's hear from BetterHelp. The most common problem I hear from those seeking therapy is how hard it is to find a therapist, how long it takes, how vulnerable you feel asking around for names. BetterHelp solves those problems. After you make the first contact, their standard is to offer names of therapists to you in less than 2 days, and you can talk to them in a first session to see if it's a good fit. If so, you're on your way, but if not, rather than going through something awkward, you simply let BetterHelp know, and they'll ask what it was you didn't like and find someone else for you. You can text, chat, or talk virtually. All of those avenues are open to you. I'm a therapist because I got good therapy. I'd had no idea how much I could benefit from it, but I knew I wasn't seeing myself or my world clearly. Here's BetterHelp's offer for Self-Work listeners, 10% off your first month of sessions if you use this link, betterhelp.com/self-work. You know, they say the best time to plant a tree is 30 years ago, but the next best is today. It's never too late to reach out and get help. BetterHelp.com/self-work. One of the most severe cases of borderline personality disorder that I've ever encountered was when a guy who was a prominent lawyer in another city drove all the way to Fayetteville every 2 weeks for therapy. Why? Because that's how frightened he was of his wife. He didn't want her to have any idea of what he was planning, and certainly not that he was going to file for divorce. Just so you won't get triggered in any way, I'm not going to go into the things she was doing to him, but they were volatile, dramatic things that were meant to frighten him. He also was figuring out with me what had led him into this relationship and this marriage. He'd been dreading his age, and she'd made him feel sexy and desirable, until the disorder presented itself not as passion or love, but as blind jealousy, threats of harm, and constant battering, both verbal and physical. Frankly, he was scared of her, and with good reason. He did get that divorce, but it took her realizing that he'd have her put in jail if the abuse continued. Before you see his wife as the total problem here, I want to quote one of my borderline clients, let's call her Mara, from years ago. She told me one day, "It's like I have a black hole in my soul. I'm constantly trying to fill it up, but nothing really does." I was treating Mara for several things: anorexia, major severe recurrent depression with multiple self-harm habits, and frequent suicidal gestures. And I'd also recognized that she could be thought of as someone with borderline personality disorder. So why was this helpful to me? And more importantly, how was it helpful for her? A diagnosis of a personality disorder simply means that it's likely that what's wrong is more characterologically based rather than being an illness with symptoms. And the term borderline reflects that her major struggles can be found in the realm of emotional regulation. But again, why the designation of a personality disorder in my own mind? It helped me know that I needed to trace her self-destructiveness in adulthood to childhood trauma. It helped me see more clearly when what could be very rational thinking turned on a dime and became irrational. It helped me understand her depression and felt need to hurt herself as she carried intense shame for things that had happened to her, not that she created. It also helped me remember that our therapeutic relationship would be challenging at times, but ultimately could be very healing for her. What do I mean by a challenging relationship? Her fear of abandonment and sensitivity to needing affirmation could be tricky. Here's an example. She used to leave me voicemail messages like this: "Call me back if you want to." Now, what's the big deal about that? The issue here is, if I called back and didn't challenge the way she left me the message, then it would mean to her I must want to get back with her rather than honoring an agreement I had with her and all my patients. So perhaps she would feel special if I took some time to answer, again, without challenging the way she left me the message. She could easily believe that I must not want to, and she'd feel rejected and might even struggle with self-harm. So what did I do? I talked to her about the message, and what was she struggling with, perhaps, that we could talk about. Now, I could easily have labeled that as manipulative, but what good would that do for her? She was expressing her insecurity, and I needed to understand that. But I also needed to calmly let her know that that kind of communication was not going to happen between the two of us. There are two highly significant fears, and I mean obsessive fears, that someone with borderline struggles usually have. The one that's most acknowledged is an intense fear of abandonment, which even appears in most borderline traits list. Let's go back to Mara's voicemail. She might easily interpret my not calling back quickly, or nowadays texting back, as me not caring, not wanting to talk with her. She could easily read abandonment into almost any decision that I might make. So let's say you have a mom with borderline traits. You decide you're going to try out another church other than the one that she goes to and you've gone to for a long time, or even talk about maybe wanting to. She can far too easily make that about rejection of her and all that she's taught you. And dependent on the type of borderline profile she may fit into, which we'll get to in a minute, she'll communicate that to you in several different ways. We'll save this example for later. But remember I said there are two major obsessive fears. The second kind is a fear of intimacy. I remember the fancy theory about this that I was taught in grad school. It was called a fear of engulfment, which basically means that someone with borderline struggles with the fear of losing their entire sense of being, kind of like drowning when someone gets too close. If I let you get too close, you'll destroy me. Now, that may sound kind of dramatic, But if you know the title of the most classic book on borderline personality disorder is I Hate You, Don't Leave Me, that makes a lot of sense. It's how those two fears get played out and characterizes this push-pull dynamic really, really well. And I highly recommend that book to you. If you think you may have some traits that might categorize you as borderline, or you're trying to love someone who is or does. So again, those fears are a fear of abandonment and a fear of intimacy. I hate you. Don't leave me. So let's take a break and we'll be back in just a moment. I've been talking about Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth now for a while, the supplement that helps women maintain optimal hormone levels, with over 50,000 glowing reviews from women worldwide, with 98% of them saying they'd recommend it to friends and family. Now you can take those results even further by pairing it with their prebiotic collagen protein, which helps restore gut lining integrity, promoting overall hormonal balance. It helps to relieve occasional bloating, reduce sugar cravings, support healthy, sustainable weight management, and boost energy. Because your gut directly affects your hormones, improving gut health can amplify your hormone harmony results so that you feel like yourself again. And what's phenomenal? Your gut is constantly sending messages to your brain, so better gut health can mean better mental health overall. Right now, you can try prebiotic collagen protein and hormone harmony risk-free and get 15% off your entire first order with a code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com, HappyMammoth.com, and use SelfWork for 15% off today. There's a lot out there telling us how to be a better parent, a better partner, better version of yourself. It's exhausting. When I need to hit pause and reset, calm is the tool I reach for to release stress and find space to breathe, even on the busiest days. And Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, and it's here to help you feel better. Since starting with the Calm app, there's so much I've either already enjoyed or I'm looking forward to trying. I open it first thing in the morning. The daily moments that so far have been narrated by the wonderful Jay Shetty have taken me to places that remind me of places I've been myself, walks I've taken or beaches I've been on where I've found rest or a sense of awe. So I'm breathing calmly in this moment, but also my mind and body are offering me personal images and memories that I can savor throughout the day. I just did something new today. Following Mel's movement class was fun and quite revealing of such simple things to do to help your mind and body start the day in as calm a place as possible. And that feels good. Calm your mind, change your life. Calm has an exclusive offer just for listeners of our show. Get 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/selfwork. This is an amazing value. Go to calm.com/selfwork for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/selfwork, and tell Calm you heard about them from me. I want to say something quickly here. I've written about how hard it is to love someone with borderline traits, and it can be, especially if their own insight into and awareness of it is limited. But let me say quickly, it's hell to have it and to try to figure out how to calm your very intense fears. I've worked with several people with borderline traits who are quite aware of how much their moods fluctuated, and they were working very hard to center themselves and both love and be loved well. But it's the more intense traits that can at times prevent anyone from seeking help or having much insight. You can imagine why the relationships that a borderline might try to have, the ones where intimacy is typically a part of them, like parent and child or spouses or partners, are often roller coasters when one person's behavior includes borderline traits. Neither closeness nor being less close is tolerated well at all. Don't get too close. But if you do, I'll be pushing you away with all my might. But don't leave me either. I can't live life without you. Now, as promised, here are the four ways or the way that borderline traits might be expressed. I'm taking this from a summary I found of Christine Lawson's book that I've already mentioned. So it's talking about borderline mothers, as that was what her book was all about. It's the witch, the queen, the waif, and the hermit. The witch, the queen, the waif, and the hermit. Let's talk first about the witch. She is someone who acts out viciously when feeling threatened, rejected, and criticized. This type of mother seeks power and control over others and reacts with unpredictable rage. Family members live in fear of triggering her. The whole walking on eggshells is what I hear many people say when they're trying to have a relationship or they're being parented by someone like this. She has little or no concern for others, has no remorse, and will not apologize for hateful acts that she has done. Again, her major fear is the fear of abandonment. But since she destroys any chance of trust, she creates what she may fear the most. And these women are very resistant to treatment. Certainly the lawyer who was driving to see me, his wife had this kind of presentation of borderline. She definitely was a witch. But he was at least a grown man. Children who are punished so severely and so erratically by their witch, quote-unquote, mother, are hurt time and time again. The major way as an adult to have any kind of relationship with the witch is to stay highly emotionally controlled yourself, set very distinct boundaries, and calmly follow the consequences previously given when those boundaries are even slightly crossed. It also may not be possible for you to have a relationship with her. And that involves a whole other kind of action. Let's talk about the queen. The queen needs to be the center of attention and uses her children to fulfill her own needs. If you disagree with her, don't do as she says, or you have your own needs, you don't love her. So you can imagine what the queen might say or do if you simply wanted to go to another church or try it out or consider living somewhere else. You'd be going to hell or you'd be rejecting her. What would people think? You can't do this to me. Children are not permitted to have their own needs or opinions and are not encouraged to become individuals in their own right. She may pretend to be a perfect woman who has it all together, very independent, very powerful, very in control, but also be very manipulative and vindictive. The queen tries to have enmeshed relationships with her children so that they don't have a life away from her and they have a strong sense of self-entitlement. They cross boundaries without recognition or regret, kind of like the witch. There's no regret here, no remorse. I worked with a young woman one time who I believe definitely was the queen. And although she was the daughter in a mother-daughter relationship I saw, she definitely believed in her getting special attention and that the focus must remain always on her needs. She left a program where I had suggested hospitalization for her. She checked herself out. And she came and she spit on me in my office, only time that's happened, and then called me 2 weeks later and said, when could she come back? I told her she'd crossed a line, that I would see her one more time for closure, and I'd refer her on, because she needed consequences for her actions. Now let's turn to the waif. The waif portrays herself as a helpless victim who needs protection. They can suffer from depression, anxiety, fears, and are prone to deep despair. When you think about waif, you think about a shriveled up kind of person who really gets lost and confused. But these folks also reject attempts by family members to help them. And in this way, by remaining a victim of life, of whatever, they passively control others and are generally unable to nurture anyone. They expect from their children that they will save her. And so those children may feel that they can help if only they do more, learn more, and give more. Unfortunately, the waif continues to stay helpless as a means to control and avoid abandonment. Now, again, these are all very generic kinds of definitions, but I think it's important to see that they're very different presentations. And again, in our going to another church example, the waif might respond by saying things like, the only reason I get up in the morning is to see you at church. I count on you to be there. You know how I get so anxious, but I know you're there to help me. That kind of thing. So she'll stay the victim and more passive aggressively control you. And last but not least, certainly, is the hermit. Hermits may have a much tougher exterior and a superficial image of being really confident, determined, and independent. But actually, they're pretty terrified of the world and they distrust everyone. They feel constantly betrayed. But here's an important point. They take criticism as a condemnation of who they are. They cannot take a joke. And even the most helpful of comments that seems to them to be critical, they will see as an attack. Interestingly enough, perfectionism is a hallmark of the hermit, and they can rage or criticize, which they often do, when others fail to meet their expectations. They have no friends, very rarely do they have friends, and they count on their children to be there for them. Now let's turn back to the church example. Hermits might demand to know, well, why do you want to go there? Who are you going with? When did they become so important to you? You must be tired of me. In fact, I can tell that you don't want to be with me anymore. So they can attack, but they take it very personally. They make your wanting to try out another church as something about them. But I want to make Dr. Lawson's point and my own one more time. If you're the one who identifies as borderline, there are treatments, and DBT, dialectical behavior therapy, is the best treatment that we know of at this point. It's very goal-directed and teaches you how to hook up your mind with your tendencies to be too emotionally governed. Both your thoughts and your emotions are important, but your impulsivity and tendency to way overpersonalize has to be corrected, and it can be. If you're in a relationship with someone who may sound like they have borderline traits, you need to respect and understand that much of their behavior, if they've not gotten help or treatment, is based on the two fears we've been talking about, a fear of becoming too close and a fear of losing you. If they're willing to look at themselves honestly, which again, I've had many women in my practice who've done just that, then there's hope for change. They can recognize the erratic nature of their emotional responses, and your support of them seeking help is vital. That's the best thing you can do. There are specific ways to express that message, which if I see that there's a lot of interest in this episode, I will talk soon about specific techniques you can do to set boundaries with people who struggle with borderline. I received an email this week that brought such joy and honor into my day. Here's what this woman says. I recently finished reading your book, Hidden Depression, and I'm writing to you from Iran. I absolutely fell in love with it. For the first time in my life, I did every single self-reflection exercise you suggested, and I have to tell you, it was an incredibly emotional experience. I read your book slowly, about 10 pages a day, giving myself time to truly feel and process everything. For as long as I can remember, I've felt that something inside me wasn't quite right. I've been to therapy and seen psychiatrists, but I never reached the clarity or peace I was hoping for until I found your book. Through your words, I found myself. I met my inner child, and I finally apologized to her for all she went through. I held her, told her that none of it was her fault, and promised to take care of her from now on. I also did something very difficult for me. I opened up to my husband, my sister, and a few close friends about what I was feeling, especially one friend whom I'd always felt anxious around. It took a lot of courage, but I did it. And to my surprise, I received so much love and support. I can already feel how much this honesty is changing my relationships. One sentence from your book has stayed with me ever since, and she's quoting me. She did the thing she would have done if she weren't afraid. And after that, her life began to change. I repeat that line to myself often, and it gives me strength to keep walking this path. If it's okay with you, I'd love to write to you from time to time to share how my journey is unfolding. And of course, that would be lovely. But she goes on, finally, I want to share the mantra I created for myself, inspired by your guidance. And I quote her, to have something you've never had, you must do something you've never done. I love that. Let me read it to you again. To have something you've never had, you must do something you've never done. Wishing you health, peace, and continued success. With love and gratitude, from Iran. I was very, very touched by this. Thank you so much to this reader for sending me this message. I love feeling this connection, and I feel very honored that she wrote. Thank you as always for being here. Please join my Facebook group as a closed group at facebook.com/groups/selfwork. It's a great group. And if you'd like a little more access to me, you can tag me and ask me any question that you might like to ask. And I do go into that page at least 2 or 3 times a week. There are about 4,000 international members, so we would love to have you. Perfectly Hidden Depression, as this reader from Iran tells me, is available now in Persian, and it's actually available in many languages, everything from Latvian to Polish to Korean to Italian, or you can get it at Amazon in either paperback, ebook, or audiobook. As always, thank you for being here. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self Work.